You've probably heard the expression, you cannot see the forest for the trees. It simply means that you can focus so much on the details that you don't see the big picture. Now, that's a good comment for reading a portion of the book of Isaiah. From chapter 13 all the way through chapter 23, there's a lot of detail. And you can get so focused on those details that you miss the big picture and the point that Isaiah is trying to make. So, let me just explain before we look at some of that passage that what's going on is this. At the time Isaiah lived, the world power was Assyria, and they were dominating the world. They were conquering one nation after another, and they came and threatened all the nations around the southern kingdom. Matter of fact, in 722, they conquered the northern kingdom. Now, the southern kingdom wanted to make alliances with some of these nations so that they could withstand this Assyrian threat. And the Lord, in this extended passage, is saying, don't trust these alliances you have with these other nations. You need to be trusting me. I will take care of you. Now, we've looked at part of this passage in the previous session. We're going to pick up in this session with chapter 19. But what we're going to do is simply see that there is one nation after another that Isaiah is saying is going to be defeated by Assyria. The point is don't make alliances with these nations thinking that's going to help you withstand Assyria. You need to be trusting me. Now, that's not stated in every passage, but as you look at the whole extended passage as a whole, in other words, as you look at the forest and not just the trees, that is clearly the point. So, well, let's start with chapter 19, verse 1, and it is the judgment against Egypt. He first talks about the fact that there will be a religious collapse. He says in verse 1, the burden against Egypt, and mentions the idols of Egypt in the middle of that verse. So when the Lord judges her idols, they are going to collapse. The next thing he mentions is social collapse. In verse 2, he says, everyone will fight against his brother. In other words, there's going to be civil war. He says in verse 3, I will destroy their council and they will consult their idols. So there's going to be social collapse because they're going to be fighting each other. They're going to be consulting idols, and it's just not going to work. The Lord is going to destroy their council. Their idols will not save them. He says something similar in verse 4. A fierce king will rule over you, which is obviously a reference to the Assyrian king. And sure enough, in 671 BC, Assyria conquered Egypt. So there is religious collapse, there's social collapse, and there's economic collapse. In verses 6 to 10, he says, the waters will fail. Now we're talking about Egypt. Water was critical. A severe drought would dry up the water supply, according to Isaiah, causing crop failure and wiping out the fishing industry and closing up the textile mills. A drought would ruin the economy. So I'm suggesting that is his point. And then there is political collapse in verses 11 to 15. Verse 11 starts out, Pharaoh's wise counsel will give foolish counsel. And in verse 12, he says, where are your wise men? So, the point of the first 15 verses of chapter 19 is very simple, that Egypt will fall. Then, shocker of shockers, in the beginning at verse 16, he says, but there's coming a time when Egypt will be blessed. I want you to look at chapter 19, verse 16. In that day. Look at verse 18. In that day. Look at verse 19. In that day. Look at verse 23. In that day. Look at verse 24. In that day. Five times he mentions now something in the future. And in this case, because of the content of what is said, it becomes obvious that he's talking about some distant future. So let's look at this. He says in verse 16, Egypt will be like a woman and will be afraid and fear. And the point is, they're going to fear the Lord. Then he says in verse 17, the land of Judah will be a terror to Egypt. So they'll not only fear the Lord, verse 16, they're going to fear no less than Judah, the southern kingdom, in verse 17. He says in verse 18, five cities in the land of Egypt will speak the language of Canaan. Now, the five cities is probably a representative of the whole nation of Egypt, but they're going to end up speaking Hebrew. When did that ever happen? It hasn't, indicating this is something in the far distant future. It gets even more clear when he says in verse 19, in that day there will be an altar to the Lord in the midst of the land of Egypt. When did that ever happen? Matter of fact, it goes on in verse 20 to talk about they will cry to the Lord and I will send them a Savior. So obviously there's coming a time when Egypt is going to be defeated, there's coming a time when they're going to speak Hebrew and turn to the Lord. Verse 21, and the Lord will be known. They will return to the Lord. Verse 22. In verse 23, he talks about the fact that there will be a highway from Egypt to Assyria. When did that ever happen? There's going to be reconciliation between these major powers. And in verses 24 and verse 25, he talks about blessing. And that's what I'm calling 16 to 25, that Egypt will be destroyed in the first 15 verses. In 16 to 25, there's blessing. Blessed is Egypt, my people, and Assyria, the work of my hand, and Israel, my inheritance. Did you see my capitalized? He calls the Egyptians my people. In the day that the Lord will bless Egypt, Assyria, and Israel, he will call the Egyptians my people and the Assyrians the work of my hand. So, we just covered chapter 19. And I said, it's about who? Egypt. And I said two things about Egypt. They're going to fall, but sometime in the future, they're going to be blessed to the point that they're going to speak Hebrew, have an altar to the Lord, and the Lord's going to call them his people. Now, that has never happened, and that drives us to the conclusion this must be talking about the millennium, when the Lord comes back and sets up a kingdom on the earth. Now, there's more, because in chapter 20, he's still talking about Egypt, only he creates a sign to demonstrate that what he's saying is the truth. So in chapter 20, verse 1, it says, in the year that Ashdod is conquered, it'll be taken. And then in verse 2, he says, at the same time, I want Isaiah to remove sackcloth from his body and take his sandals off and walk naked. This is a sign. By the way, naked doesn't mean he's totally naked. It means he takes off his outer clothes and he's walking around virtually naked. But this is a sign. And that's clear from verse 3. The Lord then said, just as my servant Isaiah has walked naked and barefoot 3 years for a sign and a wonder against Egypt and Ethiopia. So You're going to be stripped of your clothes like Egypt is going to be stripped when it is destroyed. He says in verse 6, they shall be ashamed, afraid, and ashamed. So, these verses, these opening verses, all of chapter 20 actually, is talking about Egypt again, only now they're given a sign. So this isn't, this is the sign that what I'm telling you is going to come true. So let me pause again and say, so far we've talked about one nation. Which one? Egypt. What have I said about Egypt? What's the forest look like? What's the big picture look like? Answer, they're going to fall, but someday they're going to be blessed. In the meantime, I'm giving a sign of what I'm telling you is going to come to pass. I'm going to strip Isaiah of his clothes. The second nation that is discussed in this extended passage is Babylon. Now, we looked at Babylon last time, but it comes up again in chapter 21. By the way, chapter 20 only has six verses. And now we're down to chapter 21. The burden against the wilderness of the sea, which is another name for Babylon, and it describes a whirlwind from the south desert that will sweep through the land, and that is another way of saying they're going to be destroyed. Verse 2 says this is a distressing vision, that the destruction of this place is distressing. He says in verse 3 that pain has taken hold of me. I was distressed. My heart wavered. In verse 4. Here we are again. Isaiah is describing the destruction of this pagan country, Babylon, and he's grieved over it. It pains him. Now, we saw that before. Another indication that this causes acute anguish and elicits from him compassion. Compassion for the Babylonians of all things. So, he is commanded to prepare a table and set a watchman in verses 5 and 6. And we are told in verse 7, the watchman saw a chariot with a pair of horsemen. That's how this verse is describing how the Persians who conquered Babylon marched as an army. So we're told in verse 8, then he cried, a lion, my Lord, I stand continually on the watchtower. So not neglecting his duties, he was paying close attention to what he saw. And we're told in verse 9, and this is the point, Babylon is fallen. So that actually happened, by the way. 200 years after Isaiah prophesied this, in 539, Babylon fell. By the way, it's also described in the book of Daniel. So the conclusion is in verse 10, where he says, in essence, Isaiah assures them that he has declared to them what he has heard from the Lord, the God of Israel. So, in chapter 21, verses 1 to 10, we have the second nation that will fall. It is Babylon. Keep reading. Now we have the third nation that's going to fall. It's Edom. So he says in verse 1, chapter 21, verse 11, the burden against, and that's another name for Edom, and he set up a watchman and ask, what of the night? So Edom was asking Isaiah, the watchman, how long the night of oppression was going to last. And the watchman says in verse 12, the morning comes and also the night. If you will inquire, return, come back. Now the point of this little seemingly complicated verse is simply this. Even though there's coming a morning, there's coming another night. Therefore, it would be foolish for you to make an alliance with Edom against Assyria. That's not stated, but that in the context of this extended passage is clearly the point. So we've now covered another nation, Edom. They get two whole verses in this extended passage. The fourth nation is Arabia. He says in 21:13, the burden against Arabia. And mentions a tribe that was one of their major tribes. And there's going to be trouble ahead, and their caravans will hide. So the first point he makes against Arabia is they're going to be hiding. The second is, and then they're going to be fleeing. And that's in verse 14. It mentions him who fled. So this destruction coming to Arabia is going to have them hiding. It's going to have them fleeing. In verse 15, they are fled from the sword. So they are fleeing from the sword in that verse, the bent bow, and the distress of war. So they're not only hiding and fleeing, but verses 16 and 17 says they are failing. Within a year, the glory will fall. So this most powerful Arabian tribe will fall, and Arabia's glory will go with it. All right, we've covered another nation in chapter 21, verses 13 through 17, we covered Arabia. Are you getting the drift of what I'm doing? You get it? That's what's going on. In 19 and 20, Egypt got two whole chapters. And now we come to chapter 21, and we have Babylon, Edom, and Arabia. And all three are in one chapter. But the point is, it's one nation after another, and the message is, they're going to fail. They're going to fail. They're going to fall. They're going to be destroyed. So why would you go make alliances with those nations? That is the point. Now what gets interesting is, guess who gets discussed next? Look at chapter 22 and look at verse 1. The burden against the valley of vision, what ails you now? So we have to identify the valley of vision. Now it becomes clear that what he's talking about is not a nation, but the city of Jerusalem. That in the midst of all of this, he has some things to say about Jerusalem at this time. Notice verse 2 in chapter 22. He says, your slain men are not slain with the sword, nor dead in battle. All right, so he doesn't say Jerusalem's going to be conquered, but he does say that some of their men are going to die, but not by the sword. So what is he talking about? Well, if you know what happened, a lot of their men died of starvation because of the besiege around Jerusalem that lasted for a number of years. And so a number of people died, but it wasn't by the sword. He says in verse 3, all your rulers have fled together. They are captured by the archers. So some tried to flee, and when they did, the rulers, as well as some of the people who tried to escape, were captured. Verse 4, I will weep bitterly. Here it is again. That several times in this extended passage from 13 to 23, Isaiah shows compassion. In this section, he did for Babylon, and now, of course, he does it for Jerusalem. And in this case, he says he wept bitterly over the plundering of the people, and he was told not to try to comfort them. In verse 5, it says, for it is a day of trouble and treading down and perplexity by the Lord God of hosts in the valley of vision. Now, This is important because in each of these cases, he's talking about they're defeated, they're defeated, they're defeated, they're defeated. And every once in a while, he says, and by the way, it's the Lord doing it. And that's why I'm using the word judgment when I say these various nations will be defeated, and it's the judgment of God on them. Now, way back at the beginning of this extended passage, which we looked at last week, we saw that Babylon's big issue was, remember what it was? What's their big sin? Pride. And that's what's going on. These people are arrogant, thinking we'll get together and withstand Assyria. And the Lord is saying, no, you're not. You're going to be defeated. Now, implied in all of this is their sin. And at the top of that list is no doubt their pride. So he says in verse 6 that the southern and the northern units of the Babylonian army are going to be defeated. The chariot will not be defeated. They're going to surround Jerusalem. And they're going to fill the valley. Actually, what it's saying is they're going to conquer some of the cities around Jerusalem. They didn't actually conquer Jerusalem. So he says in verse 7, and it will come to pass that your choice valleys will be full of chariots. That's what I was trying to say. The text says it for me perfectly. That is, they're going to conquer the countryside around Jerusalem. But we know from other passages, they did not conquer Jerusalem. But there was great catastrophe. Because it says in verse 8, he removed the protection of Judah. You looked in that day to the army of the house of forest. So what 22:8 is saying is the Lord removed the protection from the southern kingdom because they were looking to the armory of the forest. They were looking to their own military might to withstand Assyria. And this is the point I made at the very beginning, that the big picture is Assyria is attacking all these places, and you are trusting alliances with these nations, and the Lord's going to judge all of them, and all of them are going to be defeated. And that's one of the verses that says the Lord is doing this because you have been trusting, in this case, the forest. Look at verse 9. You also saw the damage of the city of David, that it was great. Now, a minute ago, I told you we're talking about the Valley of Vision, and that's Jerusalem. How do you know that? Because in the context, in the content of this particular section, he calls it the city of David. That's how we know he's talking about Jerusalem. And he says, you numbered the houses of Jerusalem. Ah, he calls it by name in verse 10. And the houses you broke down to fortify the wall. So they took all this timber from the forest. They built all these houses, thinking along the wall, thinking this was going to help them against an attack. And he says, didn't work. The houses failed to fortify the wall around the city. So he says in verse 11, you did not look to the Maker. You see that right in the middle of that verse? That's key to understanding the big picture. What's going on? You're trusting the forest. You're trusting alliances. You didn't trust me. They did not look to the Lord. So he says in verse 12, in that day, the Lord God of hosts calls for weeping and for mourning. So the people should turn to the Lord and trust in him. That's what they should do. But verse 13 says, note the two opening words, but instead. Instead of trusting the Lord, joy and gladness, slaying oxen, killing sheep, eating meat and drinking wine, let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. I thought that was in 1 Corinthians. It is, chapter 15. I wonder if he got it from Isaiah. The point is, with a philosophy of let us eat, drink, and tomorrow we die, the people of Jerusalem were rejoicing, slaying oxen, killing sheep, eating meat, and drinking wine. Instead of mourning, they were living it up in banqueting and revelry and wine drinking. So he says, you're not going to escape some of this either. Verse 14, then it was revealed in my hearing by the Lord of hosts, surely for this iniquity there will be no atonement for you, even to your death. Because of their sin, there would be no solution. They did not trust the Lord. They went just living it up. And so they were going to suffer some of the consequences. Now at this point, something really interesting happens. I have said repeatedly that this extended passage is talking about one nation right after another, right? Well, all of a sudden, we're going to discuss two individuals. Now, we're still talking about Jerusalem as the nation, but he's all of a sudden going to focus on two individuals. In chapter 22, verse 15, he says, to this steward, Shebna, who is over the house, and say, what have you here, and whom have you here, that you have hewn a scepter here, as he who hews himself a scepter on high, who carves a tomb for himself in a rock. So he picks out one man. And apparently this was a high court official. And this fella is spending a lot of time, effort, and money to build himself a tomb. He wants to make a name for himself. So he's carving a tomb out of rock. So he's talking about Jerusalem, but he's going to focus on one individual. And he's saying, here's an example of what I'm talking about. So in chapter 22, verse 19, he says, and the Lord will throw you away, and he's going to do it violently. Meaning, you'll be taken off into captivity. He says, that was verse 17. I think I said it was verse 19. It's verse 17. Verse 18 says, and there you shall die. So he's saying this fella is full of pride, trying to make a name for himself, even in constructing this tomb. And buddy, it ain't going to work. That's putting it in that's the vernacular translation. You're going to ultimately die. So he's going to be taken out of office. I will drive you out of your office, verse 19, and you're going to ultimately die. Now, it's not just one individual, it's two. Look at chapter 22, verse 20. Then it shall be in that day, I will call my servant Eliakim. In other words, this second fella is going to replace the first fella. Matter of fact, he says in verse 21, I will commit your responsibility into his hands. So he describes in more detail than I'm covering. But he's going to be clothed with this fella's robe. He's going to be strengthened with his belt. And he's going to give this all of his responsibilities to this new fella, Eliakim. And the key to the house of David, I will lay on his shoulders, which depicts the responsibility that he's going to have. And by the way, that's why I said this first fella was a member of a high office. The way you take all the little details and put the picture together, and that seems to be what is being described. So he says in verse 24, all right, let's go to verse 23. I will fasten him as a peg in a secure place. So the first fella was, I'm going to take you away. And you're going to be destroyed. The second fella, I'm going to secure you. You're going to replace that fella because of his pride, and I'm going to make you secure. So he says in verse 24, they will hang on him all the glory of his father's house. In other words, his family is going to be well known. The first family, first fellow was full of himself. He was full of pride. He came to nothing. The second fellow is called God's servant, and he's saying, you are going to be secure, and your family name will be well known. In that day, he says in verse 25, the peg that is fastened in the secure place will be removed. So eventually, even this peg would come to an end, signifying that eventually the kingdom of Judah would be taken into captivity eventually. Whew. Boy, we are not strolling through this passage. We are running through it like it's a high-speed foot race. Are you with me so far? What have we done? Well, let's review before we continue. Chapters 19 and 20. The nation was Egypt. And you're going to fall, but you're going to be blessed someday. Interesting little twist. I'll give you a sign of that, but that's the major point. Then we got to chapter 21, and he covers in succession, in rapid succession, Babylon, Edom, and Arabia. They're going to fall too, so don't go trust them. By the way, at this point, Babylon was not a world empire. Assyria was the world empire. Babylon was a small little entity that was to eventually conquer Assyria. But at this point, they're just a little entity like Edom and Arabia. Okay? So at this point, we've got four nations, Egypt, Babylon, Edom, and Arabia. And then all of a sudden, he mentions, and Jerusalem's not going to escape all this either. And so he talks about Jerusalem and focuses on two men in Jerusalem. And one is filled with pride and he gets replaced by one that's serving the Lord. Although eventually Jerusalem's going to go into captivity. And of course that happened when Babylon became, Assyria was not able to conquer Jerusalem. They surrounded it, they besieged it, but they weren't able to conquer it. But when Babylon conquered Assyria, they came, and in 605 to 586, Jerusalem fell. The southern kingdom fell. All right, I told you we had a string of nations. We got one more, and that encompasses chapter 23. In chapter 23, he's going to talk about the fall of Tyre. Look at verse 1, the burden against Tyre. For it is laid waste. And that is describing the total destruction of Tyre. He says in verses 2 and 3, be still, you inhabitants of the coastland, you merchants of Sidon. Now, what's going on is this. The Hebrew word translated be still actually means be silent. Just sit down. He still don't say anything. Now, as you know, from the geography of Israel, Tyre and Sidon were along the coast just north of Israel. So he's describing the conquest of Tyre, and he's saying to Sidon, look at that. Do you see that? Just be still. Just be silent. And look at the destruction. You merchants of the nations. You see, this was the shipping industry along that coast. And he's saying it's going to be destroyed. Since Tyre is collapsed, Sidon, the marketplace of the world, just needs to look on in silence. Then he says in verse 4, be ashamed. So he tells them to be silent, and then he tells them to be ashamed. So Sidon, some have said, as the mother of Tyre, is called to be ashamed or lament over her daughter who is going to be destroyed. And then he says in verse 5, and when the report reaches Egypt, they also will be in anguish or agony at the report of Tyre. So the destruction of Tyre was not only bad for the Phoenicians, It was bad for the Egyptians because of this, the fact that they were on the sea course. This was the shipping industry, and it was going to affect not only them, Tyre, but Sidon and Egypt. This is a major catastrophe. Now, in the overall point of Isaiah, this extended passage, why would you trust them? You see what's going to happen to them? Why would you trust an alliance with those people? All right. Verse 6 of chapter 23. Cross over to Tarshish. By the way, does Tarshish ring a bell with you? Where did you hear Tarshish before? You heard Tarshish? Who flew to Tarshish in the Bible? Jonah. Remember? Tarshish is Spain. So that he's saying, cross over to Tarshish. He's advising the refugees to flee from Tyre to Spain. Get out of Dodge. This is bad news. And then he says in verse 7, is this your joyous city? And the point of this verse is, Tyre at this point is not the ancient joyous city that it used to be. So he says in verse 8, who has taken this counsel against Tyre, the crowning city, whose merchants are princes, whose traders are the honorable of the earth? Who brought this horror on Tyre? He's asking the question. Who has taken this against Tyre? The answer is in the next verse. The Lord of hosts has purposed it. Now, one more time. In the overall context of this extended passage from 13 to 23, the point is these nations are going to fall. But it's the Lord who purposed it. And as I said a while ago, that isn't said in every case, but every once in a while that comes out as being a major point in this passage. The Lord has purposed it. And the point is, in that verse, if you read it all, is he humiliated the proud and he humiliated the admired. Again, these cities are all proud. They've not looked at the Lord, and God's going to judge them. And by the way, Judea, Jerusalem, you want to make an alliance with those people to save you from Assyria? You out of your mind? Another paraphrase. Then he says in verse 10, the overflow through your land like the river. So the people are told to escape to other countries, spreading out like a river, overflowing its banks. He says in verse 11, the Lord has given a commandment against Canaan to destroy its stronghold. So God has raised up, in this case, Babylon, to destroy this merchant city. And verse 12 says, and he, that is the Lord, it's capitalized, you see that? And he said, you will rejoice no more. So the refuge that flee to Cyprus in this context will find no rest. Behold, the land of Canaan, this people which was not. So the Chaldeans, I should say, is another word for Babylon. Chaldeans, the people which was not when Assyria was founded, will be the beast of the desert. Remember I told you they're a small little place now. They're going to grow later. That's the point. So he's amazed that this little nation that has a humble beginning, founded by Assyria, would be the ones to bring Tyre to a ruin. And Babylon did just that. So he says in verse 14, wail, you ships of Tarshish. Your strength is laid waste. The trading ships of Tarshish were to wail. Their great center, trading center is gone. That is Tyre. Now, remember how we started out with Egypt and it was, you're going to fall, but you're going to be blessed? Well, we've come to the end of this extended passage, and he says something similar to Tyre. In verse 23, verse 15, he says, "Now it shall come to pass in that day that Tyre will be forgotten for 70 years, according to the day of one king. And at the end of 70 years, it will happen to Tyre as the song of the harlot." What's that about? Well, the idea is this. Tyre would one day again become a trading center, like a prostitute who was forgotten but who returned to her illicit practice, singing to attract lovers to herself again. So he says in verse 16, "Take a harp, go about the city, you forgotten harlot, and make a sweet melody. Sing many songs that you may be remembered." Now, what an illustration. Harlot? Yeah, it's appropriate because what was Tyre about? Shipping, merchants, making money. So he uses the harlot who does her craft for money as an illustration. So you're going to be out of commission for a while, but you're going to be back for a while. But it's just like a harlot. You're doing it once again for money. So he says in verse 17, "And it shall be at the end of 70 years that the Lord will deal with Tyre. She will return to her hire and commit fornication with the kingdoms of the world on the face of the earth." Her former position of playing the merchant type harlot is going to return. So he says in verse 18, "And her gain and her pay will be set apart for the Lord." What? She's going to be back in the money-making business, but this time it's going to be for the Lord. So unlike the selfish prostitute, Tyre will set aside her income for the Lord, and it would be beneficial to those who dwell in the Lord's presence. In other words, when the Jewish exiles returned from Babylon, the merchants of Tyre sold the building material to them to make money, but they did it to build the temple. So he, in essence, saying, God's not totally done with Tyre. He has a purpose for them. All right. Wow. We've made it to the end of chapter 23. One more time. Let me review. 19 and 20, Egypt. 21, Babylon, Edom, and Arabia. Chapter 22, Jerusalem. And aside, speaking to two individuals. 23 is Tyre. Now, the point is that Egypt, Babylon, Arabia, Tyre will be destroyed. And even though some may arise later, don't trust an alliance with any of them, but trust the Lord. That is the big picture of this extended passage. Whew. I didn't think we would make it through it, but I'm not quite done. One commentator has summarized this whole passage in a very interesting way. He says this, "Chapters 13 through 23 seem to be saying that since the glory of the nations equal nothing, and since the scheming of the nations, that's 14 to 18, equals nothing, and since the vision of this nation, chapters 21 and 22, equal nothing, and since the wealth of the nation, chapter 23, equals nothing, don't trust the nations." I read that statement. I said, he has put his finger on the pulse of what's going on. Only he's analyzed it in a very effective way. The glory of the nations, 13 and 14. The scheming of the nations, 14 to 18. The vision of the nations, 21 to 22. The wealth of the nations, 23. All of those are nothing. So don't trust the nations. And this author added, and the same is true today. If we believe that a system of alliances can save us, we have failed to learn the lesson of Isaiah and of history. God alone is our refuge and strength. Psalm 46. All right. Did you get the big picture? The big picture is Assyria is the threat. And so Judah, the book is written to Judah, is making alliances with all of these nations, are trying to, are depending on them one way or another. And Isaiah comes along and says, now wait a second. These nations are all full of pride. And God is going to judge them, which means they're going to be destroyed. So don't trust them, trust the Lord. If you get that, you have the big picture that explains all of the details in the forest of Isaiah 13 through 23. Suppose you were shopping for a security system for your home. You looked at one brand that you knew was popular and you decided to buy it. And you placed it in your cart. Then imagine that before you got to the checkout, you bumped into a high school classmate who had become an expert in security systems. In fact, he was so good, the government had hired him to secure the White House. In the course of the conversation with him, he noticed the security system in your cart and said, "May I make a suggestion?" And when you said, "Of course," he told you that he had inside information on the future of that company and that product, and that in light of what their future was, he would recommend that you not buy it. Would you buy it? Probably not. All of which is to say that perhaps we should consider the future more often in making present decisions. That's the kind of thing that Isaiah is recommending. Father, thank you for giving us this big picture perspective. That we're tempted to look at the circumstances at the moment, and that you want us in your word repeatedly, not just in this passage, to look at the big picture, what's coming in the future. And that ought to teach us to trust you. Lord, teach us that. In Jesus' name, amen.